Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never, ever ends. The Video Nasty Project, taking a look at all the horror movies that were calculated to drive you insane, at least according to the British government in the 80s. Tonight, we're going to be watching Satan fight Rambo's boss in The Evil. Why don't you check out the really cool trailer, and we'll be back in like 2 seconds.
An ancient terror sleeps in the Vargas house. Can anyone survive its awakening? The Evil.
We're not going to get out!
They can scream. They can run. But they can't escape. Richard Crenna, Joanna Pettit, Victor Buono, The Evil, rated R.
And that was the trailer for The Evil.
Also known as the House of Evil. And I think there's one other name it went by, but anyway.
Generally, this is known as The Evil. It's not an Italian movie where it has 100 different names.
Let's be honest. You picked the most generic name possible.
So the movie is really super simple. You have Richard Crenna.
He was a solid film actor and TV actor from the 50s on.
The one thing you're probably going to know him for is probably from the three Rambo movies.
Yeah.
So he is this professor of psychology.
He's considered an expert in drug rehabilitation, a pioneer, and his work is respected enough that he's getting the funding to put together his own rehab clinic.
And it's this big, like 200-room mansion down in the Southwest. So he gets together his former students and his wife, Joanna Petit, and she and him go up, and he and his students start cleaning it up. Weird things happen. The doors and the windows all slam shut, and they're trapped inside this big spooky mansion house. There's this ghost that kind of wanders by occasionally.
That only the wife can see.
And then Richard Crenna, he's down in the basement. He finds this trap door. They're held down by like this cross, yanks the cross out, and all of a sudden everything goes to hell.
The very epitome of the trope sealed evil in a can.
Exactly. Yeah. And so Richard Crenna, he goes down into the basement, and there's this like little sub-basement thing underneath.
Mm-hmm.
And he climbs down into that, and there's this big white room with like fog everywhere. And at the very end of the room, we get to see Satan, actual physical embodiment of Satan.
I think he was a good choice, but it can take you out of the movie a little bit, is that they cast Victor Bruno as Satan, and anyone who grew up watching the Adam West Batman series is immediately going to go, King Tut!
Or, he's done a bunch of other stuff beyond King Tut, but much like Richard Crenna, Rambo's boss, you're going to say, wait a second, I know you from one thing and one thing only.
Because whatever happened to Baby Jane is not the thing that people are going to immediately go to, or exactly. Man from Atlantis.
Yeah, and that's pretty much the movie. It's a very linear A to B to C plot.
One of the things that really impresses me about overall the whole structure of the film is, and I couldn't find any commentary as to how much pre-production time went into the film, but actual location production time, filming only, 30 days.
That's a disciplined crew.
Not only just a disciplined crew, it shows the strength of all of the actors chosen for the roles that they're in. The fact that they have to set up special effects shots, and they obviously didn't have to do them over again. They got it right. Maybe it took a second take. Maybe it took a third take. But they got what they needed quickly. And it was all practical in-camera effects. With the exception of anything that involved the electricity. They were doing that kind of sparkle overlay.
Oh, which yeah, is that obvious, kind of scratching the film sort of thing.
Yeah, it was that. That's that was post-production.
The movie opens with an old caretaker dude. I mean, this guy looks like an early iteration of Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
Comes up, and this is a guy who, he's the caretaker of the house. He clearly knows there's something up with the place, because he, even though he's the caretaker, he clearly hasn't entered the house
in some time.
In a long time. And is sitting in front of the house, taking deep breaths and psyching himself up. I can do this. You're just a house. I can go in. I can clean you up. I can light the furnace, and then I can get out of here. Takes a swig from his flask to build up some courage, and then goes into the house. And things almost immediately start going downhill for him.
He gets down into the basement and opens up the furnace, starts stoking it, and all of a sudden this big jet of flame, whoosh.
It's also a really well-done fire gag.
I'll give the movie this. There's a couple of fire gags, the incident with the furnace at the beginning, and the fire gag as they're trying to get off of the balcony to escape the house. Mm-hmm. They get this cable, and they tie it to a pillar, go off the balcony, throw it down, and one of the students climbs down. And about midway down, the cable starts heating up, and then he like bursts into flames.
Well, also knowing how you have to do fire gags, you can't leave the guy on fire for very long. So they had to, if it was a person on the rope, then they had to have some really good safety processes set up. But the point is, that's how it starts out. Then we meet our leads and we start getting a little history of the house. One of the things I caught on is, at first I was afraid they were going to say Indian burial grounds, because they talked about how the tribes would stay away from the place. But it turns out, no, but there was like a hot spring.
The house is genuinely a resort and spa.
Yeah.
Is what the property originally was.
So, yeah, of course, and so of course it's not going to look like a Civil War era house. Other than the impression was this guy was a Confederate, and even that's just an impression. They never come out and say
it. They never identify if he's North or South.
Yeah, so we don't know where this is. We don't know the context.
I think we can at least place where the location is, because you can see California license plates on the cars. So we can at least pin it down to the Southwest somewhere.
Yeah. And then, but they talk about the hot spring, but then of course they say the imagine where, yeah, there was like sulfur deposits. And I'm like, well, I see where we're going. But the thing is, not in a detractor way, more in the, I've just seen way too many horror films.
Again, it's a very linear, very simple plot where if you're paying attention at all, you'll be able to spot everything that they're pointing out down the road. And that's just good script writing.
Yeah. The only of the students that are really singled out for some introduction are a student of CJ's who has just earned his own PhD. And apparently his thesis was building off of CJ's work. Who's going to go help with the clinic along with his girlfriend, who does also happen to be one of his students.
Wildly inappropriate that relationship is.
And they're walking down the hall and there's students milling about. And she's being, you know, public display of affection with him. And he's all like, no, 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 someone might see. And then not a couple of cuts later, they're full on lip locked in the corridor, students passing by, and no one's even giving them a second look.
Yeah, you get the feeling it's an open secret.
Good on you. You have no discretion at all.
And I understand why, because they're kind of setting up this is like the beta couple of the movie. And then we get to the house. Again, it's the owner of the house was from the Civil War. So the house is really old, well, over a century old.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get a little history. It was used as a children's school, a religious children's school for a while.
It's not like an insane asylum that had, you know, 1,000 maniacs locked in the basement that died or something weird like that.
Yeah, no tragic history, although it is the local house that has gotten the legend of being haunted. So Joanna sees some hazy, ghost-like figure. Almost from the get-go, she's getting... and. We get the sense that she's more in tune to this than anyone else. That was a great ghost design.
It was a very good-looking
ghost. And I especially like there was an evolution, because early in the film, the ghost is a misty figure. Reminds me a lot of the ghost effects from The Uninvited. And you can kind of tell it's beckoning her, but you can't really see what's going on. And then once evil is unleashed and things are going a little crazy, the ghost more fully manifests into a recognizable human form, but is pure white. And I think you and I discussed this earlier, that we were both reminded of the singing busts from the Haunted Mansion.
It was basically you took the guy and like put like white powder all over him, so he almost was like albino.
Well, I even noticed his eyes, and I don't know if that was After Effect or if they just put white contacts on him. But I mean, he looked like a marble statue animated, although it was moving very well. And I just, even though it's a not a verbose performance, I was noticing his body language and certain things he was doing that told me, okay, this is certainly not our threat.
So the question I have for you guys then is, if you go and read reviews for The Evil, it comes down to the ending of either you're going to love it or you're going to hate it. A lot of people take issue with Victor Buono as the devil. That he's kind of frumpy, he's kind of, you know, kind of camp a little bit. Did the ending work for you?
The thing is, he's mostly good at comedy. That's his specialty. And in this movie, it is a little discordant with how the rest of the film is. And also, he's not breaking any ground as Satan. He's mostly, you're an insignificant whelp. He's making some base insults, and he's talking about the torments he'll feel.
They cut away from him, and they'll cut back to him, and then he looks a little more demonic with the hair and the horns and stuff.
And I'll be honest, all through this, I was having a comparison to Peter Stormare as Satan from the movie Constantine, which is similar in that they're both white-suited, they're both somewhat jovial. And just thinking about, A, obviously that fit for Constantine, but also just how much more ground I feel Stormare was covering in his performance of, yeah, he's being the jovial, somewhat charming Satan while still projecting a credible threat without having to get into the petty insults. So for this, yeah, I think the movie works great because honestly, all they had to do was, they didn't have to go down in there. They had the cross, they closed the door, they seal evil in the can again, they leave. And I know there are edits of this movie out there that do take out all of Victor's scenes. And so with all that said, to answer your original question, I would have to say I probably would prefer the movie without those scenes.
Did the ending work for you? Did you like...
The ending works for me fine. People go at what they... When they see an actor appear on the screen, the suspenders of disbelief get snapped, and they remember the actor from something else they've seen him in. And that's the problem that people will have with Victor. At no point in this film did I personally have that problem with any of the actors. Heck, the one actor who does make me stop and like mentally, the movie's still playing, but I'm like trying to think to myself, it was the realtor. I'm like, what all have I seen this guy in? Because he's been in a lot.
Interestingly, the person with the shortest IMDb is Victor. But that's because he started acting late and he died at 43.
Tragically died, yeah.
And he was one of those actors that always looked older than he was. I mean, this movie, you'd put him in his 60s, the way they have him made up. Although I think some of that's the wig.
Probably.
But still, so you have no problem with Victor in the movie?
No, I have no problem with him being in the movie. The scene works really well. I liked the scene. My problems with the film aren't really anything that's actually integral to the story as it's presented. It's that brief background bit that to me makes no sense because it doesn't have anything to do with the story. And that's the fact that it's a Civil War era mansion. So?
I always felt that was just shorthand to say how old it was.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. I don't mind the Victor Bruno scenes. I think they're fine. But I could see where the movie would probably be enhanced. Now, again, maybe that's a prejudice because I am making that comparison to Night of the Demon, where the movie would be clearly better without the on-screen evil presence.
It's interesting that you compare the evil with Night of the Demon, and it's having the special effects, cheap special effects foisted upon it, because there's moments in The Evil, like that bit where the one girl gets dragged up the stairs by something unseen, was actually really effective and creepy, and it was a limitation of the, well, we want to have a monster here, but we can't afford a monster, so what are we going to do? We're just going to have some black and whack and up it goes.
It's what's happening. We don't know. It's literally a pool of darkness. The simplest thing to achieve. We're just not going to light this section of the set. And they go in there and we hear stuff. Stuff happens and then the guy comes tumbling out. And it's that great, your mind gets to fill in the blanks of what the actual horror that's happening. There's also, I mean, they did a great job of several points in the movie, which is a combination of the work by the actors and the, and I'd like to know how they pulled the effects off. I think particularly with the scene where the one woman is being yanked around by our unseen force and it's ripping her clothes off. Some of it is obviously her, and I wonder if she has a dance background because of how well she's moving. But there are times when she's clearly being dragged by something and there's no way she herself, the actress, is causing that effect. The clothes are easy. I know how that's done.
And you can't really say, oh, there are the wires, because she's in her bra and panties. There's nowhere to hide the wire harness to fling her around the room.
And there's also the, what I call the Star Trek moment when, you know, the seal is first broken and the house starts shaking and everybody's
flying around left and right.
And clearly some of that was old Star Trek. Okay, we're going to tilt the camera. You slam yourself against the wall, which is fine. But then again, there are some moments where, okay, you slam yourself against the wall. Now there's going to be this special effect that's going to drag you a little bit.
Right.
And I think it was just a combination of things that worked fairly well.
So do we have any final thoughts on the evil?
The thing I would say about The Evil is, particularly with the cast, it's a great snapshot of who were prominent character actors in the late 70s. Again, you've got a host of people you see. And even the crew, I think it's a good snapshot of late 70s filmmaking that's not at the top tier, but it's not at the bottom tier.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing, though. Let me see that cover again real quick. Because you look at this cover, you know what this reminds me of? I mean, it's a great cover, but it's kind of generic. I'm reminded both of The Keep.
A little bit, yeah. The font really sells the Keep angle of it.
Also because of the, I'm trying to think of other movies that have the hand or the crypt opening, but this is, I think The Keep is probably the most, it's, yeah. I mean, it certainly conveys, you know what the nice thing? I look at this image and I'm going like, it actually conveys aspects of the movie.
Yeah.
It's not incongruous. And that's always one of my big things. So it's like, why that cover?
And it's so common in exploitation movies that the poster often has nothing to do.
Whereas this, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that scene.
Yeah, yeah. So Ian, Mr. Policeman, would you seize The Evil?
Reality, no. It's not a freaking seizable film.
I have no idea how this one at all ended up on the list. I mean, the fact that my initial question after watching it was, well, so was this made for TV or did it get a theatrical release? I mean, the only things I could possibly minutely think they cared about was, one, the devil, and two, they stripped the woman down to her underwear. But I'm sorry, I've seen more titillating things. No.
Even the nudity is just her in her bra and panties. We don't ever actually see any boobies or anything.
There's no curse words. There's no... The worst curse word literally is excrement, uttered by the devil.
There's that scene where the guy is cutting through the door with the circular saw and goes into his hand. That's about as violent as it gets.
The only way I can see they seized these films, this film in particular, was they were grabbing a whole bunch of others and, oh, this one's called The Evil. Well, it goes in too. I got nothing.
The closest parallel I could think would be Evil Speak, which actually wound up on the 39. And it got nailed because it was endorsed by Aleister Crowley and it was strongly satanic. why that one got nailed in this one, which is has freaking Satan in it.
It's just, this is not in any way an offensive horror film. At this point, if this one's offensive, we might as well just lump in the entire haunted house genre.
All right, well, I guess we're going to give it a pass. And what the fuck, Mary Whitehouse? Really, what the fuck?
Although we say that all the time.
But in this takes, we really mean it.
Yeah, explain yourself.
Ian, did you like The Evil?
The Evil? Yes, the it's Evil. A good movie. It's a good movie. It's not the first time I saw it. This was a refresher watching it. I cannot honestly recall when I saw it before. But once things were happening, I was like, yes, I remember that. I remember that. It's a very good film. It's simple. They didn't have to work hard to achieve the end result is what I think is the only thing that I don't like. But it's a good film. It's a really good film. If you want somebody who doesn't want to watch horror, here, watch this.
This one's a nice, safe horror movie.
Yeah.
I think we wound up watching it together back in the 80s because I remember renting this, and I haven't seen this in like 100 years. So I think we caught it at the same time.
Yeah.
I just probably wasn't around that day. So one of the things I was struck while watching this movie was, hey, the further we get away from the main list, the better the movies get. I like this. This was a fine movie. I remember it opened, I went, well, it's opening strong. And then as we got through the movie, it was like, okay, I mean, I know this genre. I think part of it is I am particularly fond of haunted house films. You know, my favorite horror movie of all time is The Haunting. And I really love The Legend of Hell House and even John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, which this movie has elements that reminded me from all of those. So maybe I'm just pre-programmed to it's one of my favorite horror subgenres. But also just, yeah, it's a great film. I mean, a whole bunch of recognizable 70s actors. The script worked well. The production values were great. I'm always a sucker for good in-camera effects, and
this film is largely that's all they did. Yeah. Practical in-camera effects.
Yeah. So this one ticked all of your boxes.
Really, it did. It was a good entrant into this particular genre of film.
I think of its peers of the time, of The Changeling, of The Haunting and stuff, I think it is right in the middle for me. I think I like The Changeling much, much better. This one is a nice, solid entry. It's got good cast. It's got a nice, great, clean story. So I have no issues with it.
There's another movie I would like to ask, actually say, okay, which one would you consider this to be? Is this above or below House by the Cemetery?
Ooh.
House by the Cemetery has a really good similar theme.
They're so different. They're in tone and execution that I don't know if I could compare them. If I had to pick one, I'd probably go House by the Cemetery. But they're so different animals. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a fair comparison.
Yeah, because the one I was thinking about a lot while watching this was Burnt Offerings.
Okay.
And that was a made for TV, but I mean, you're still talking, you know, Betty Davis and Lauren Hutton. So, I mean, I'm going to blank on the actor's name, but he was one of the Three Musketeers. Oliver Reed. Oliver Reed. There. I came up with it. So this was, you know, it was a, it had a great cast of notable film actors. And I think that's probably why it probably edges out with this one, where this was mostly really well-known TV actors.
One of the reasons why I brought up House by the Cemetery and then earlier in my pointing out The Changeling is all three movies have a ghost who's trying to direct the living.
All right.
That's the link between all three films is you have. And then it's like, oh, I'm torn between. It's like I want to say that this film is what The Changeling should have been. By and when I say that, I mean in pacing and delivery of story, because The Changeling had pacing moments for me.
So we're talking about the genre of there's a ghost, but the ghost is not the actual threat.
Correct.
Yeah.
The evil for me, it might have flaws along the way. It might have a couple of pacing issues. But the one thing I will give the movie is it is never, ever boring.
Yeah, no.
From start to finish, it is just, it grabs you and does not let go. Yeah. So I'll give the movie that.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I know a couple movies on that we've reviewed, I have damned with faint praise by saying the movie was competent. Now, this movie absolutely was competent, but it takes it to that next level of, I think this is a great example of the value of a really good editor.
Yeah.
You know, a really good editor who kept the pace right on track, you know, kept things flowing. And even when, you know, little silly things happen that make no damn sense whatsoever, you're at the moment able to disregard them because, well, we're going somewhere. We got to keep up.
It's Hitchcock's fridge logic, where it makes sense at the time, but then after the fact, you're getting a midnight snack and you're at the fridge and you say, wait a second, that didn't make a goddamn lick of sense. And Hitchcock called it the fridge logic. It's like, ah, I got you. My movie's that good.
Yeah. So in the end, liked it.
Liked it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. We all liked it. There's enough rewatch value to hook you.
I would happily have my other horror movie friend sit down and watch this film. If for no other reason, hey, let's watch an example of decent 70s horror before things got weird.
All right, so we liked it all around. Unanimous thumbs up. Imagine that.
It happens.
Occasionally. All right, well, I guess we'll all catch you next week then, won't we? And that's the evil, sealed up back in its crypt forever, at least until some dumbass comes along and yanks out the cross and it gets loose and starts all over again. Like maybe next week. No. Next week, we've got a slasher movie, a good, honest-to-goodness, old 80s traditional slasher flick. It's Final Exam. So, why don't you drop us an email telling us how much you're looking forward to the next movie or how much you loved the evil and Richard Crenna, and we'll catch you next week. Until that time, hail Satan and stay evil.
This house is trying to kill us all.
Oh, God, it's not the house.
Could it be Satan?